break, it's attacca immediately. This incredibly dramatic movement starts in E minor, same tonality but in the minor, prestissimo, extremely fast, in 6/8 time. So you have to listen to this. That's the tempo. And you couldn't imagine a larger contrast. How this must have shocked the listeners of Beethoven's time. There is this very peaceful E major, and then Walpurgis Nacht in Goethe's Faust, or like indeed Inferno in the Divine Comedy. And always listen to the bass, it's like a passacaglia. That's the main motive that we will see how he develops this. Then this prestissimo middle movement is also in sonata form. Again, very unusual. We have two opening movements, both in sonata form, and both are very short. So the proportions of the late sonatas are very, very different from the earlier ones. If you remember sonatas like the Waldstein Sonata or the Appassionata, the opening movements were gigantic, and the opening movements were carrying the main weight of the sonata. Not so here. The final movements become more and more important, and really, to me, one of the greatest achievements of Beethoven is that he can carry through this incredible tension through till the very end, and his last movements never fall down. I think that no composer after Beethoven could keep that up to the very end, not even Schubert, not certainly not the others. Sorry, How often we say, oh, what a wonderful piece of Brahms, and pity about the last movement. And we never say that with Beethoven, and certainly not with his predecessors. I don't know any weak last movement of Mozart and nor of Haydn. But somehow the 19th century had a problem with this. And Beethoven, it's his fault because he did it so well. It was very, very difficult to continue. So, back to the prestissimo. We're already on the dominant. Here the chromatics. This passus duriculus. We know from the Baroque rhetorics the hard way in that it's like Christ carrying the cross. End of the exposition. Now let's go on, because there now comes a very mysterious section. I told you about this, the bass. And now we have it in the upper voices as a canon. You can hear the two voices. And underneath we have this tremolo, like a timpani. And this point, when the bass moves from B natural, a semitone, up to C natural. Fermata here. This is a very unusual passage, and this has served as material for musicologists to write a doctoral thesis about. I'm not going to do that now, don't worry. So. At this point, Beethoven writes una corda, so he wants the keyboard to move on to a position where the hammer only strikes one string. This is very difficult or almost impossible to reproduce it on a modern piano, because on a period instrument this had a very distinct color indeed. So I did ask my technician to make it absolutely extreme, but it's not quite what the forte piano did. And you hear, and the inversion of this theme in the bass. Together. Fermata. So theme and inversion, but if you look at this theme, it's like a palindrome, something that's the same backwards and forwards. We have that in literature. I'm sure there are English palindromes, there are palindromes in every language. But you hear it backwards and forwards simultaneously. And then, recapitulation. Twice in this movement Beethoven writes espressivo on this theme, which also means with expression, but also a little bit slower than the main tempo, because immediately after that he writes a tempo, back to the main tempo. This infernal movement. And now comes the most beautiful movement to me that Beethoven ever wrote, if I may say so, but this is very subjective. Everybody can have a favorite movement, and mine is this. Theme and variations, six variations, and let me just play the theme. Thank you. 16 bars are repeated, then the second part. These 16 bars are also repeated. So we have a very symmetrical structure here, twice 16 bars, both parts repeated. This theme is like a sarabande. If you listen to a Bach sarabande, obviously inspired by Bach and the movement of a sarabande. Another sarabande kind of music that you know very well. Aria of Bach's Goldberg Variations. And Beethoven must have known the Goldberg Variations intimately well, although there is no evidence to this. Bach's music was not known and not performed in Beethoven's time. If somebody wanted to know Bach, one had to go to a library or to private collections, great collectors and music lovers who had manuscripts or first editions of Bach. And Beethoven must have seen this somewhere, because the structure of the final movement of Opus 109 is obviously modeled after the Goldberg Variations. Of course, there we have aria with 30 variations. Here we have only theme and 6 variations. But like in the Bach work, at the end of the movement, the theme returns in great simplicity and completes a circle where beginning and end meet. Let me describe in a nutshell the 6 variations. The first one is like an Italian opera aria. Marked molto espressivo. We have a wonderful expressive melody, and it's very interesting that although a lot of this late music is incredibly polyphonic and full of counterpoint, but here we have a very distinct melody and accompaniment. I play the second part now. Variation is like a mosaic. You can recognize particles and little molecules of the theme, and it's like a pointillistic painting where out of the little dots and points the picture emerges. Let's remember the theme again. And now this variation. Beethoven's imagination and fantasy is so endless and boundless that instead of a mechanical repetition of this section, he writes out a further variation for the repeat. The interval of a descending third is the main element of this movement, and you can hear it all over the place. For the next variation, Beethoven changes the character and the tempo and the meter. It's allegro vivace, it's 2-4, and it's a very quick variation. Mentioned the thirds, this descending, and as an inversion, we have the ascending thirds. So, yeah. For the next variation, again, he goes back to triple time and writes piacevole, a little bit slower than the theme. Is his instruction. Piacevole with kindness. And we can hear already the late string quartets in this music. It's very beautifully written four part counterpoint. You can hear the four instruments. The viola, now the cello, second violin. Next variation is, as I showed you before, the credo variation, right out of the Missa Solemnis. When we have in the Beethoven credo in the Missa, it's not in this key, but it's the same music. And this is a very Bachian fugato in a very lyrical sonata, something like a sculpture. It's made out of marble, and it has such an incredible gravity and monumentality. After this brief fugato, like a wonderful cut in a film. Suddenly the whole world changes and we are back in the tempo of the theme, the movement of the sarabande, and we hear the theme in the middle voice, in the alto voice. Changes it to the soprano voice, and keeping the same pulse of the sarabande in the accompaniment, he is changing the note values, larger and larger units and smaller note values. We started with crotchets, then in quavers, then in triplets, semiquavers, demi-semiquavers, and as the smallest note value, the trill. Let me just play it again. Now, quavers. Now, triplets. Semiquavers. Demi-semi-quavers. Now the free trill. Trill goes to the lowest bass. It's indeed has nothing more to do with the piano. The piano is a miserable instrument, but it has to be like an earthquake. And again, this from the peaceful harmony, we have reached an absolute ecstasy here. To the middle voice, and the bass is playing the demi-semi quavers, and on the absolute top of the keyboard, you have like lightning little stars, the notes of the theme. Yeah. Well. A wonderful homecoming, just like in the Goldberg variations. And the second time it's almost identical to the beginning of the movement, but it's even more simple because he takes out the arpeggi and arpeggio. Here is one. asks for a minimal little ritardando and the pedal to be held down on the final chord. This is a most poetic sonata to me that has no beginning and no end. It's not a real ending. And indeed, when one plays this in a concert, I don't think that applause is appropriate here. We performers, we are always very grateful when there is applause, because, you know, making music is not a one-way street. I mean, we have to communicate with each other. But I think you will agree with me that there are certain pieces of music where the best response is silence. This is one of them. And Opus 111 is another one.